It is coming up to 4 o'clock, 2 minutes away from 4 p.m. here on KZSU 90.1 FM. This is your DJ Ramsey. I'm with you this Thursday and every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. for my show, which is called Hi Kifa Ksava. The show's title is in three languages, and that's my attempt to reflect the trilingual nature of my show, where we try to feature songs in Arabic, French, and English. Those three languages happen to be very, very popular in Lebanon, and as is the vibrant music scene in that country. I was privileged to go there this summer and to sort of investigate and look into the music scene and the artistic scene in Beirut, Lebanon, and I was very pleased with what I saw. So I'm also bringing with me interviews that I conducted over this summer in both in Beirut, Lebanon, and also in Amman, Jordan, where I was delighted to interview a very, very amazing director. Her name is Najwa Najjar, and she directed a film called Pomegranates and Myrrh. I had actually seen the movie when it screened in San Francisco, and I was delighted to make her acquaintance and meet her in person over the summer in Amman, Jordan. And I wanted to first and foremost thank Najwa Najjar for sitting with me and giving me the exclusive interview that you'll be hearing today during my show here on KZSU 90.1 FM. We are streaming live at kzsulive.stanford.edu. The show's name again is Hi Kifa Ksava. My name is DJ Ramsey, and I'll be with you from 4 p.m. until 6 p.m. this Thursday and every Thursday for the trilingual show Hi Kifa Ksava.
Hi Kifa Ksava.
Hi Ksava.
Hi Kifa Ksava.
Kifa Ksava.
يا سلام كل شي تمام كل شي تمام ما في مصاري ما في مصاري دايما طفران دايما طفران بس بدنا نعيش بس بدنا نعيش حتى لو تطيش حتى لو تطيش مجنين عالفاضي مين عالفاضي زي التراويش زي التراويش يا سلام يا سلام كل شي تمام كل شي تمام ما في مصاري ما في مصاري دايما طفران دايما طفران بس بدنا نعيش بس بدنا نعيش حتى لو تطيش حتى لو تطيش مجنين عالفاضي مين عالفاضي زي التراويش زي التراويش
ما هيك بنحب بندوب نبكي وما منتوب بنحب بندوب نبكي وما منتوب بس مبسوطين بس مبسوطين مرتاحين مرتاحين ما بنعرف لوين ما بنعرف لوين احنا رايحين احنا رايحين يا سلام يا سلام كل شي تمام كل شي تمام ما في مصاري ما في مصاري دايما طفران دايما طفران هلا بي سولو 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 الدنيا كبيرة قصصها كتيرة بلا وجعت راس بلا هالسيرة هاي دنيا كبيرة قصصها كتيرة بلا وجعت راس بلا هالسيرة بس بدنا نعيش بس بدنا نعيش
الطفيش مشغولين على الفاضي مشغولين على الفاضي زي الدراويش زي الدراويش يا سلام يا سلام كل شي تمام كل شي تمام ما في مصاري دايما
This is DJ Ramsey. The show is Hi Kifak Sava. I am delighted to be with you today on the show. And I'll be bringing you, hopefully, a nice selection of songs and music coming to you from Lebanon. And we'll also be bringing to you with great joy my exclusive interview with Najwa Najjar. Najwa Najjar is the director of Pomegranates and Myrrh, which is a film that she directed and that played internationally. It played at many festivals around the world and has received a lot of critical acclaim. The movie itself is political. It's romantic in many ways. It's disturbing in many ways, and I think, to say the least, it also can be controversial. So I hope that you'll stay tuned for my interview with Najwa Najjar today, and as well as the songs and music that I'm bringing to you from Lebanon and from the region. I'm glad that you were able to join me, and I think I'm going to start the show today with my interview with Najwa Najjar. We'll play it in parts, and we'll chapter it with music here and there, and before I begin my interview before I air my recorded interview with Najwa Najjar, let me just tell you a little bit about the film. The director is Najwa Najjar, as I said, and the film stars, the cast includes Yasmin Al-Masri in the role of Qamar, and Waleed Abdul Salam in the role of Ode, and Hiyam Abbas in the role of Habib. Not sure if you guys have heard of Hiyam Abbas, but she is an Arab actress who's an Israeli citizen, and she has done quite a bit of movies out there. She's starred in such movies as The Visitor. She's been in Paradise Now. She's also been in such movies as Steven Spielberg's Munich. She's done quite a bit of movies. She starred in a film called Miral earlier this year. She's a very talented actress, and she also is in this movie, Pomegranates and Myrrh, directed by Najwa Najjar. So I had the chance of sitting with Najwa this past summer in Amman, Jordan, and I was able to ask her about the film, and of course I couldn't resist asking her about her experience with Hiyam Abbas, as well as her experience as a filmmaker who's undoubtedly talented, but who had to face several obstacles in terms of directing this movie, which she simply titled Pomegranates and Myrrh. I'm going to segue to my interview with Najwa Najjar in a moment, but in the meantime, I wanted to thank everybody once again for tuning in and staying with me today here on the Hi Kifak Sava show, coming to you from KZSU 90.1 FM, Stanford. And to remind everybody that I'm with you this Thursday and every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. We are also streaming live at kzsulive.stanford.edu. That's kzsulive.stanford.edu.
Jenny's Light is an organization dedicated to improving and saving lives by increasing the awareness of all perinatal disorders, including postpartum depression. Jenny's Light provides a variety of resources and support, from online guidelines on obtaining help to working to pass legislation that will make it easier for new mothers to obtain treatment. If you'd like to donate to Jenny's Light, please visit www.jennyslight.org. That's www.jennyslight.org.
Every 2 seconds, someone in the U.S. needs blood. The Stanford Blood Center supplies patients with more than 100,000 blood components per year to help save lives. They rely on community donors like you to accomplish their mission of making sure blood is there when it's needed.
All healthy, eligible individuals are invited to donate. For more information, call the Stanford Blood Center directly at 650-723-7831 or just visit bloodcenter.stanford.edu.
This show is Haiki Faksava, and I think I've kept you in suspense long enough. Let's go to my interview with Najwa Najjar, director of the film Pomegranates and Myrrh. This interview was conducted over this past summer in Amman, Jordan, where I was delighted and very honored to sit with Najwa Najjar, who gave me this exclusive interview. This interview is airing for the first time here on KZSU 90.1 FM. We'll be playing it in parts, so stay with me for the interview and for musical treats throughout the show from now until 4 to 6 p.m. Thanks for joining me.
This is KZSU 90.1 FM. I'm sitting here in Amman, Jordan, with the director of Pomegranates and Myrrh, none other than Najwa Najjar is sitting with me. I met Najwa here in Amman, and she has kindly agreed to do this interview with me here on KZSU 90.1 FM. Najwa, I am delighted and honored to be sitting with you, and a very unexpected honor. You've been in Amman for a while now, or are you just visiting?
I've been here for about 3 days, and it was such a nice surprise to see you. I mean, we've never met before, and I knew you by picture, so it was absolutely wonderful to see you.
Well, I'm flattered that you would say that about me, because I, though I haven't met you in person before, have met you through your work and the impact that the movie, the film, Pomegranates and Myrrh, has left upon me, as well as upon my students, has been unforgettable. Wow. The movie itself has been screened, I believe, in many countries at this point, but I'm referring specifically to the opening night from the Arab Film Festival, which happened in San Francisco at the Majestic Astro Theater. Yeah. Do you recollect that night?
That was wonderful. I'll never forget that. And that was absolutely wonderful. I mean, we've screened in maybe over 70 festivals, and the Castro was one of the most memorable nights, seriously. It was a wonderful audience, and the feedback was wonderful, and it was magical. It was a magical night.
And you were kind enough to do a Q&A session afterwards. I do remember the reception from the audience. We had many, many Stanford students at the opening night. They all left with a wide range of emotions and reactions. But I was wondering if this kind of reception has been typical of the American film viewing market or people, or was it sort of an exceptional response and reaction?
Yeah, that's really a wonderful and an important question. We opened at Sundance, And that was after we had the gala opening at Dubai Film Festival, which opened the Arab world. Our next festival was Sundance. And it was during the inauguration and a new president, a new era. So we were extremely happy to be there. And we had, you know, 15 interviews. We had all kinds of TV interviews. And the audiences, three packed audiences, wonderful Q's and A's. And it was also very, very special. And from there, we had several other screenings in the U.S. I mean, we had international, but I'm going to concentrate on the ones in the U.S., and I have a certain point to make. Sundance was amazing. We weren't in competition. We had 15 newspaper articles written on us and TV and everything else. Then we went to the Kennedy Center. Kennedy Center, the standing ovation went on for 10 minutes. We had MoMA in Boston, also 1,000 people that were on their feet. They loved it. And then we also did in D.C. a few other screenings at the Jerusalem Center. We also screened in several festivals. We opened, if we didn't open, we either closed or opened all the major Arab film festivals in the U.S., Palestinian festivals in the U.S., and I tried to attend as much as possible, as much as I could travel, and it was a lot of traveling for that time period. And I have to say that the audiences there were unbelievable. So when it came to finding distribution, and I think that it's really important to talk about it, because we make the movies, we get them done, and then if they have a wonderful reaction, it's really important to have it on a wider distribution. Most of the festivals and most of the places that it did screen, even, for example, in the Kennedy Center, I mean, it would be maybe 15% of the Arab community that was, for example, in D.C., and a lot of the Americans and other communities which live in D.C., for example. At the Castro Theater, it wasn't all the Arab community in San Francisco. It was a mixed community. So we tried to get a distribution. And it was across the line. We met with all the major distributors in the U.S. And across the line, they were very, very, very hesitant to take the movie. And it was like, we have a track record. I mean, look at it. We've been opening, closing, full house audiences. People are asking for it. Universities are buying it. It's a movie which can be, you know, which needs to be set, which needs to be seen, because our story has been almost always told by the other. The other being anyone else but the Palestinian. So it's really important for the Palestinian to tell his story. And, you know, we don't, you know, the movie theater, the movie making, the industry in Palestine maybe brings out one or two movies a year. So these have to be taken into consideration. These are authentic voices that are coming out of the country. But it was really, really, really difficult. And we had Hiam Abbas, which is a big star. We had new names. And I think across the line, the actors and actresses, everybody said that it was a well-made movie, well-acted, the whole bit. And so I think that it's really important that we start to try and find ways to find distribution. And like, for example, the work that you do and the support that you give to filmmakers is tremendous. And we need more people like you, and we need to have more venues of distribution.
So what happened with the distribution issue eventually, or is that still an ongoing process?
Well, I mean, before we went to Sundance, you have to find a distributor. We have to find a distributor. So there was one, we didn't know the companies, okay, because we live so far away, and, you know, our Palestinian producer decided to take one that was really, really excited about the project, but he refused to give them the 15 years. What we discovered was, you know, we only made it for 9 months, and we said, depending on how you progress, then we'll go accordingly. Because this, even though we don't know the companies, we do know the mechanism of distribution. That if it's they pack you in with 10 other films, and they sell you as in with one of 10 films. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have somebody, especially for a Palestinian movie made by a Palestinian director in the country,
right,
if you don't have somebody that understands this niche and pushes for this niche, it becomes, I think, it becomes another random film. And luckily, my producer only said 9 months with this particular company. And after that, we to other distributors who said, you know, love the movie, it's a great movie, but we don't think that it's going to find its audiences. And we were like, try. Rent a theater. You know, maybe it has to be done in a different way. Maybe we have to rent theaters in the U.S. And we considered that, but we were so out of money that we couldn't do it. And make deals with theater companies. And to go to, for example, five major cities in the U.S., take San Francisco is important, Detroit, D.C., Boston, and Texas, Houston, I think.
Sure.
Yep. And then start from there. And New York, sorry. And New York.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. and you know, rent a small theater and start from there. Maybe we can divide with the, I mean, we have to think of alternative ways, and we are trying to think of alternative ways for our next movie. Hopefully, with the success of Pomegranates, it will be a little bit easier. But we are finding that a lot of independent movies, and it's not just because it's Palestinians, have a really hard time finding the theaters. But just in answer to your question, I mean, the response in the U.S. was absolutely tremendous. I mean, Castro was magical. It's this old theater, and it's wonderful, and the audience there was amazing, and I love San Francisco. So it was a very special night as well. But I have to be very honest. I mean, the Kennedy Center was outrageous. MoMA was tremendous. I mean, we really had some wonderful, wonderful screenings in the U.S.
And that sounds wonderful in terms of audience reception. Has there been any controversy or any kind of negative reaction from people? I mean, the film certainly is meant to generate a discourse that's much needed in America and in the West. But just from looking over the internet, there has been probably a few critics who feel that the movie may be almost dangerous to certain groups out there. Did you feel personally that there was a reaction that wasn't quite what you expected, or?
I mean, we you know, when I did this movie, I didn't do it to create controversy, but I did want to touch subjects which are important to us. This is not a movie that's done just for the West, nor is it a movie just for us. It's a combination. I mean, but it's very important for me that when people in the country, in the Arab world, watch it, they don't go, Najwa, come on, what are you doing? I mean, get over it. You know, we need to also develop our cinematic language. And not just do ABC for the West to understand the Palestinian conflict, because there's a lot of books out there, documentaries, all kinds of things that are out there. We need to have movies which start not at zero, but maybe start at 20 or start at 50, you know, and to go forward. And at the same time, you can't do a movie that's completely alien to somebody in the West that they don't understand anything. And I know that if you're not a little bit familiar, maybe, you know, you can get a love story, you can get, I mean, because it is very much a human story, and it doesn't tell you ABC politics, but it's about land, it's about identity.
Hello.
Waidni wen wen alqa
طارقة
أنا
والغذلة سيب طياتي ومندل مندل فارقة
أنا يا بابا خوني وياك ساعة مقدار بليا أنا توعدني وين وين ألقاك روحي العزيزة تبدأ هلا
فوق الأقحوان أترقرق توهجا فوق عوسج الجدران تسربلني النوارس وتعبر بي مني إليه
That was a song called Maraya Ruh, translated as Mirrors of My Soul, sung by Reem Benna, and that was taken from her album, or her greatest hits album, in Arabic, Ar-Rawa'i'. And it also happens to be the CD title, the title of one of Reem Benna's CDs. So if you like that song, check out her CD called Mirrors of My Soul, in Arabic, Miraya Ruh by Reem Benna, B-A-N-N-A. And if any of the names that I've been mentioning today on my show sound a little bit different or foreign to you, you're always welcome to check out our playlists on zookeeper.stanford.edu or to go to kzsu.stanford.edu for the playlists. And hopefully we've piqued your interest about some of these artists that we've been playing today and in other weeks here on my show. Hi, Kifak Sava, coming to you from KZSU 90.1 FM. We are streaming live at kzsulive.stanford.edu, and I will need to remind everybody out there today to stay tuned after my show, as with every week, for the Songsmith Show with your DJ MC Dizzy Jackson. The Songsmith Show presents creators and interpreters of finely crafted music. Tune in for an eclectic mix of most American genre and genre blends, as well as the occasional oral oddity. That show, the Songsmith Show, follows mine this Thursday and every Thursday between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. here on KZSU 90.1 FM. So stay tuned for the Songsmith Show and MC Dizzy Jackson after my show today. I also wanted to continue with my interview with Najwa Najjar, an interview that I directed, recorded this past summer in Amman, Jordan. We were listening to part of that interview and had a very small technical glitch. I'm going to resume with that segment of the interview in a moment. But to tell you a little bit about the film itself, the film that Najwa Najjar directed called Pomegranates and Myrrh. Kind of takes place in Ramallah this decade, where a free-spirited woman dancer, whose name is Qamar, finds herself the wife of a prisoner, Zaid, and away from everything she loves until she returns to the dance, defying society's taboos. At the dance, Qamar is confronted with Qais, who has taken Qamar's role as the head choreographer. Sparks fly between Qamar and Qais, creating more than a passionate, emotional dance for the both of them. Matters become even more complicated when Zaid's sentence is extended. At the same time, the family's legal case against the land confiscation faces one obstacle after another, and the villagers from nearby villages are unable to reach the family's olive groves, placing the annual harvest and consequently the family's livelihood in danger. And Qamar's life is thrown into turmoil as she becomes increasingly attached to Qais and caught. So this is kind of a little synopsis. I've been reading. It was actually written by the film's director, Najwa Najjar, herself. And she is today's interviewee. She is the female director of the movie Pomegranates and Myrrh. I don't know how many of you have seen that movie. It's played at many festivals and amassed a bit of controversy, as well as generated a dialogue dealing with different issues, including the movie's love story, where, as I mentioned, the main character, Qamar, finds herself, though married to one man, now in prison, sort of getting involved with another, and that created a whole other dynamic to the movie, in addition to the political aspects of the movie, of course. And so I'm going to pick up with the interview with Najwa Najjar, and we'll be back with more music in between. We'll be playing the interview in segments for the show here on the High Kifak Sava Show, coming to you from KZSU 90.1 FM. Thank you for joining me today. And here we go. Here's the continuation of my interview with Najwa Najjar, where we're talking a little bit about the controversial aspects of this film.
I was a little bit surprised to hear when I asked you about the controversy that you mentioned examples, from certain maybe conservative people who didn't want a certain image of women, etc. But what I was expecting, Najwa, was more of a response that centered on pro-Israeli lobbyists and others who may find that the movie is actually dangerous because it is showing this, I don't want to say positive side, but this atypical side of Palestinian characters on the screen in a very humane, classy, very approachable manner. I mean, as you said, the film did not attempt to do the ABCs, but nor did it lose people who don't know about the discourse. Was there some kind of controversial response from people in the U.S. who felt that, the representations of Palestinians in this humane manner could actually harm certain media prejudices?
Well, I mean, there were actually, maybe 350 articles, if not more, were written up about the film. So there have been, I think, a variety of points of views. I'm trying to remember. I mean, I'm sure there was points of views that said, this movie is just, I think one review that I read, I think it was also during Sundance, I'm sorry, this movie completely bored me. It had nothing, wasn't typical of what we expected to see of Palestine. See, I think it's also something else. I think what is often expected of a Palestinian movie, and it's quite sad, and I think this is what we really have to try very hard to fight against, is that the Palestinian image has been completely dehumanized, and the conflict has been reduced to one that is Jewish versus Muslim, as opposed to a national conflict. Now, Christian Palestinians, obviously, since Jesus was born in Palestine, have been there for centuries, at least, 2,000 years. Yes. So Palestinians constituted 20% of the population in Palestine. They were the first that were encouraged to leave after 1948, and that is because of this incredible link that the Christians have with the West.
Right.
And it's very true. So one of the first questions I was asked in almost every single screening international was, why do you have a Christian family? Mm. It's just like, well, because they exist there, because they live in Palestine. But it's,
as opposed to a Muslim family?
As opposed to a Muslim family. Yeah. And I think it's because the conflict has been relegated to one that is Muslim versus, it's a religious conflict. And that's very dangerous, especially when Islam has been reduced to a completely demonic stage, especially in the U.S. And I mean, it's dangerous just in terms of humanity, in terms of history, in terms of just putting it right. I mean, it's wrong. It's simply wrong. So, one, this is not Islam. Two, it's not a religious conflict. Three, there are three religions plus atheists and agnostics and everyone, Buddhists, who live in the country. So, so I think that there were several things that were a result of what image is expected. I mean, they don't expect Palestinians. I mean, one person said, I think they're a little bit too beautiful in the movie. Another distributor once, a French distributor, when he saw a very rough cut, he said, this isn't Palestine. I said, really? And he says, no, this can be in Bordeaux. I said, why, have you ever been to my country? He says, no. And I think their image of what they expect, and it has been, people have played into it, is that if there are, 20 beautiful Palestinian children, or 20 not so beautiful Palestinian children, but the 20th has a runny nose, so who do we focus on? We focus on, the one with the runny nose, to create this kind of pathetic pity picture, and it's terrible, and Palestinians are not like that. There's a sense of pride, and people live and they try and find life within, under conflict and under occupation, and otherwise occupation wins. I mean, if you don't live and you don't exist.
انك عندي بامان امان امان
Ah, 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 ah.
That was a track called Sara by Iman Humsi. Iman Humsi is she's a Lebanese-born singer who plays the kanun and is known for her beautiful kanun playing. She plays solo and she plays in ensembles and in several maqams. Traditionally, the kanun accompanies singing following the song line. It's 72 plus strings are plucked with plectra attached to the two index fingers. Humsi pioneered a 10-finger technique, giving it a broader range as a solo instrument highlighted in this CD. Hopefully you've enjoyed that one. And before that, we heard a song called Yemmi, which sounded a little bit like a prayer or a lament. That song is actually by Khalid Muzannar, and it is taken from the soundtrack to the album Ouhalla Lawain, in French, Et maintenant on va où? And in English, Where Do We Go Now? That is the soundtrack from a movie that's currently playing in theaters worldwide by Lebanese director Nadine Lebaki. That movie's actually been getting a lot of positive reviews. And although I don't think it's playing in the U.S. yet, it certainly is on its way, because I heard that Sony has bought the movie, so they'll be distributing it in the U.S. There's also been rumors and big buzz about this being Lebanon's entry into the Academy Awards Best Foreign Film category. So we'll see how that goes. And before that, we heard another song from another soundtrack, and it was from the soundtrack to the film Zozo. That was a little track called A Prayer by Adam Norton. And those three songs followed the second part of my interview with director Najwa Najjar, who was kind enough to agree to an interview with me this past summer in Amman, Jordan, where she sat down to discuss her film Pomegranates and Myrrh. I don't know if you've heard of this movie, but Najwa Najjar is the focus of our interview for this episode of my show, Hi Kifak Sava, here on KZSU 90.1 FM. Let's listen to another segment from Najwa's interview with me and from Amman, Jordan this summer, and we'll be going to some music after that. We'll certainly come back and continue my interview with Najwa Najjar in segments here on the Hi Kifak Sava show, coming to you from KZSU 90.1 FM.
How difficult was it to get the filming done? There are the normal expected obstacles with budget and lighting and camera work and etc. But was there an added layer of obstacles that you had to deal with? One, as a woman, a Palestinian woman director, and number two, as someone who was working with, you know, the occupation in place.
That's a super question. Thanks. Actually, there's, of course, the obvious, you know, which all filmmakers have to go through, raising the funding, doing everything else. And then we have, and it's not so much as being forbidden or stuff, because we don't give our script to be approved by the authorities or anything like this, but it's being completely arbitrary. This is a nightmare when you're in production. When things are arbitrary, because you don't know, and every minute costs you a bundle. We're shooting in Super 16. We've got a crew of 35 members. Of course, finding the crew, because we had to have heads of departments which are not available in Palestine, it's to convince them, it's okay, really, we're fine, you can come and film here, you can come and be the sound man, you can. So we need the heads of departments. So we found this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful European crew that came. So we had six people coming from abroad, and then we had the complications of them coming in through the airport, bringing in the equipment, and if they say they're coming to Ramallah, it can be a problem. So it's a lot of these issues. And then finding people that are on the ground, Palestinians, because we want to also build an industry. And, you know, there hasn't been that much. I mean, there's a lot of directors and documentary makers and people that worked in reportage, who work for TV. But we don't have people that work, for example, Best Boy. that do electricity for cinema, or, you know, an assistant sound or a boom man. We have got a few. I mean, there have been several projects that were launched in Palestine, which gave a lot of which shed a lot of light on these various activities. So, and then there was a few other movies. Hani Abu Asad, when he shot Paradise Now, he made sure also to try and have a Palestinian crew. So there are, you know, the filmmakers who do come. Rashid comes. Rashid Masharawi works with Palestine. So we had some training of the crew, and working with heads of departments, we were able to build up the industry a little bit more. After we shoot, you have the bobine. They have to pass through, you know, Israeli customs. Are they going to open the bobine? Is it not going to open? All of this is a whole day's work of shooting. Mm-hmm. So we try to plan very, 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 very well. Very well. Every minute, every second. But then, again, it's arbitrary. You don't know. Mm-hmm. We try to avoid checkpoints. Out of the 650 in the country, we only pass through 3. But the 3, you can either stay for 3 hours, or you can stay for 3 minutes, or you can stay for, you know, all day. And each, when you have a 14-hour working day, there goes your day. So it was all these, it was a variety of issues that we had to deal with. And I'm often asked quite a bit whether it's difficult to be a woman. And to be very honest, it was super easy. I'm super easy. And if you just tell someone, you know, excuse me, could you please just move that mountain just 2 feet to the right? That's okay. Whatever you want, hadir. You know, we had a mixed crew. We tried to make sure that our crew was also very mixed, that we had men and women, because it's also setting an example of workplaces and how you're supposed to work, men and women working together, having a healthy environment. So we had a very much a mixed crew, and it also represents the movie, which is a very mixed movie with different people, and, you know, it's not concentrating on just this or that. So as in terms of being a woman, it wasn't that hard. In terms of doing a film under these circumstances which we live in, it was complicated, and it was arbitrary, and we had to play it by ear. But we were very lucky, except for the final night when we had finished shooting, everything was done. At 1 o'clock, we popped open the bottle and we're ready, celebrating, go downstairs, and there is 2 jeep loads of soldiers waiting for us.
Wow.
And this is in Ramallah, which is supposed to be, you know, Palestinian Authority territory.
So these are Israeli soldiers.
And so it was the Palestinian producer came, and he was spending, you know, whether, you know, everybody out of the building, that's what they wanted, everybody back in, everybody. And the foreign crew panicked. I mean, they really panicked for good reason. I mean, they're holding guns. It was a scary thing. And, you know, in addition to worrying about our cast and crew, were also worried about the 16 canisters, bobines that we have in the, you know. So it was a tricky evening. By 5 o'clock that morning, we had solved everything, but it was a scary, scary night. You know, we had a few of those scary nights, but I can say that, you know, movie's done, it's in the can, it's done, it's been out. So
right, and it's out there in the world at this point.
Yeah.